It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Larry Maggot's here with Kara Swisher and Harry McCracken. We're going to talk about Target. Apparently, they know if you're pregnant, even before you might know. We'll also talk about Google and the Wall Street Journal. Who's right? Who's wrong? And we'll ask the question, who the hell is Paul McCartney? It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 341, recorded Sunday, February 19th, 2012. Does this store make me look pregnant? This Week in Tech is brought to you by Ford, featuring the EcoBoost engine with turbocharger and direct injection. Look for EcoBoost on the 2012 Explorer and Edge, the 2013 Escape, and at Ford.com/technology. And by GoToMyPC. GoToMyPC apps are the missing link for remote access to turn your iPad and iPhone into your office computer. Visit GoToMyPC.com for your free 30-day trial. Use the promo code TWIT. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 15% off your new account for 6 months, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT2. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show that covers the tech news of the week. And what a week! Oh, my goodness. Let's start with our Skype visitor from the East. Actually, she's just up the road a piece. Kara Swisher of All Things D. You look like an Air Force pilot.
Thank you. I'm about to take off.
That's awesome. It's great to have you. We appreciate your joining us, Kara.
Sorry I couldn't be there.
You know, it's fine. That's the beauty of Skype, isn't it?
Indeed it is.
After all. Also,
our non-beauty, so to speak. But anyway.
Well, I'll take it.
No one looks good on Skype, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's not exactly. You're right. It's not exactly flattering, but it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay because it makes it possible to do this show. Frankly, without Skype, I don't know if we'd be able to do any
Indeed.
Of our shows. Indeed. Also here, Mr. Larry Maggot, who did to make the trip up from CBS Radio. It's good to have you, Larry.
Good to be here.
And Larry'sWorld.com.
Yeah.
Anything else I should plug?
Oh, writing for Forbes these days.
Oh, that's good.
San Jose Mercury News and anything
Forbes else. Forbes is a Time Life company, isn't it?
Forbes is not a Time
not,
Life.
Not a Time Life.
No, Fortune is.
Fortune
is a Time Life company.
The reason I ask,
and I'm an expert on this topic.
The reason I ask is Harry McCracken is also here, newly anointed editor at large at Time Magazine.
I'm not sure if anointed is the word, but yes, it's true.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Congratulations.
Like a crown or something.
Are you going to still do Technologizer? Or
Technologizer is going to be part of Time.com. So starting soon. If you go to Technologizer.com, you'll end up at a section within Time.com.
That's great. So we have some very prestigious journalism experts here. Mm-hmm. I suppose we should start in that case. I don't know which to start with. We could talk about the tech journalism sucks kerfuffle.
Kerfuffle is right.
It's a pure kerfuffle. Or we could talk about, I think I want to talk about Google, the Wall Street Journal, Apple, and privacy. It all started with an article. Actually, it started even before then with a blog post that then the Wall Street Journal picked up about a tricksy little technique that Google and other sites were using to get around settings in the iPhone. The Wall Street Journal's headline, Google's iPhone tracking, web giant others bypassed Apple browser settings for guarding privacy. And now I know All Things D is a Wall Street Journal effort.
No. We're
related.
A Dow Jones property.
Dow Jones, related.
Like distant cousins.
Yeah. But you used to write for the Journal.
I did for many years.
The Journal has, by the way, this was discovered by a Stanford researcher named Jonathan Mayer, but the Journal confirmed this. The Journal has of late been doing a lot of privacy stories.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, Julia Angwin especially.
Yeah. And some have complained, and I'd love to hear what you think about this, Kara. Some have complained that the Journal is being a little disingenuous, that in fact they're using many of these techniques themselves. They have ads, they have cookies,
yep.
They have lots of bugs on their page and so forth. And so there may be perhaps not, they're not as clean as they might imply. Now, they're not using this technique.
No. I mean, I think that's sort of, you have to separate the two things. Every publisher uses these things. And on our site, because Walt is so particular about it, we give warnings after warning after, you know, people have to click a thing. And then we also allow people, we give them instructions on how to get rid of cookies, which is unusual. And I can tell you, they didn't love it when we did that at Dow Jones, but Walt was very particular about informing people about their rights and what was happening to them. And so we have a big yellow thing that pops up. We just did it again just recently. Where we remind people of what this stuff is. So every publisher, we have them, but we tell the people how to get rid of them. We explain to them. We put it in plain English. The Journal, just like everybody else, has them. And I think that you have to separate the two by saying, you know, they have them too. It's not exactly the same as what was going on with Google. And
but so I don't think the Journal particularly respects my privacy. Would you say that?
I think they have normal practices of most publishers. I don't think they go as far as our site does in terms of disclosure, ethical disclosures, and cookie disclosure. We disclose everything. We're very promiscuous, and we disclose everything. I think most publishers should be doing that, so should be sort of following the way we're doing it. We'd like to have even more. We just had some social changes. We put up a big blue thing that you couldn't go further unless you looked at it at least and X'd it and opted understood it kind of thing. So, it's separating two different stories. So that to attack the Journal for that and not discuss the story is kind of gets away
no,
from
no.
the point.
I won't get, yeah. I will discuss the story. Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah. I do have this sense that the Journal, mm-hmm. In many of these privacy stories, and not particularly in this one, but in general has really mm-hmm. been making a lot of hay about privacy when in fact not yes. walking the walk.
Well, I think the practices they're discussing, they are walking the walk. The ones they're writing about, they don't do like a couple.
They do tracking cookies. They were bitching about tracking cookies. They do tracking cookies.
It was a little more complicated than that. It was a lot of, it was an explainer. Lots of newspapers do tracking cookies. This was an explainer of the more aggressive manners of doing so.
So
that series was a little different than what you're describing.
It's
although,
my
yes, of course. They look like Miss Crabtree and then are doing the same thing themselves. Yes, there is some element of that.
Right.
But they're not going as far. They were describing very aggressive means, including this one from Google, which was highly aggressive. I think the headline was a little much. I think a lot of people.
They, in fact, are not tracking iPhones, for
yes,
instance.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But
so that would be, in fact, a lie.
Well, I'm not sure I'm going to go with lie because they are what they're doing is from what I understood from the story is that Google's doing a workaround from Apple's practices.
Right.
Apple has a very strict practices, which is not unlike other browsers. They're much more strict. And you could discuss why they do that and the various reasons. But they're touting as a privacy element. And Google did a workaround, a technical workaround.
But Kara, is Google responsible? I mean, Apple isn't the government, although sometimes you wonder. Is Google responsible for having to abide by Safari's rules? I mean, if they can do a technical workaround and they claim they're only doing it for people who are logged into Google and they're giving all these lofty explanations, is that necessarily such a horrible thing?
Well, it's the government of Apple, sure, if you want to use Apple products. I don't know. I feel like if Apple wants to do those things, they should, whether they be for, you know, lofty reasons or competitive reasons, that's their rules. I mean, sort of everyone let me just say, bloggers were on the side when that interesting thing with Palm. Do you remember everybody was doing workarounds around mimicking iTunes and stuff like that? That's their world. And so I don't know whatever reasons, I think they should, one, disclose it, and two, work with Apple on it. It's just their rules. It's sort of like you have a fence around your house. This is the way I want it. You don't just walk in. It's an interesting question, of course, but I think that it's not, Apple does not have to abide by other people's rules, and they never do anyway. And this is their rules for Safari. That's their rules for Safari.
Let me throw something out. First of all, let me explain what happened so people understand what we're talking about. Cookies, I think everybody who watches this show knows what a cookie is. It's persistent client-side state information. It was created many moons ago by Netscape because it makes sense that the browser, your computer, should save some information about your visit to that site. For instance, what page you left it on, what your password was. Whenever a site kind of remembers you, Google Plus or Facebook, it's doing that by setting a cookie, a persistent piece of information is setting a preference on your computer. Cookies have been around since practically since the beginning of time. They're part of how browsing works. There are first-party cookies, that is, cookies that are set by the site you're visiting. If you go to Facebook, you log into Facebook, and Facebook remembers you, that's a first-party cookie. But there's another kind of cookie that Apple and others call third-party cookies. Actually, Apple doesn't call them third-party cookies, but Firefox does. This is a cookie. Let's say I go to the Wall Street Journal website, and an ad from DoubleClick is on the site. DoubleClick will also set a cookie, and it is permitted in the way the browser's set up that any site you're visiting can set a cookie. Well, that frame where the DoubleClick ad is considered a site you're visiting by the browser. So that's a third-party cookie. You didn't enter in DoubleClick.com. You entered in fact, WallStreetJournal.com, but it is setting a cookie. So that's a first-party cookie from the journal, a third-party cookie from DoubleClick. Some privacy advocates say that these third-party cookies allow leakage of information. And actually, if you think about it, there is some leakage of information. If, for instance, DoubleClick has ads on many, many sites, they can aggregate information about your visits to all these sites. They can know every newspaper you visited, for instance. If some of these sites know more about you than others and shared it with DoubleClick, they could aggregate even more information about you. That's third-party cookies. Some see this as a privacy issue. Almost all the browsers I know of, have a setting that says block third-party cookies. It's true on the Macintosh, it's true on Chrome, it's true on Firefox. In iOS, Apple, and this is, to my knowledge, the only time this has ever been done, and this is on the iPad and the iPhone, Apple, by default, blocks cookies from sites you didn't visit, from third-party cookies. It's just turned on by default. They offer this in Safari. It's actually, I think it's a good thing to offer as a preference, but the default is to leave it on. If you want to, you can block cookies from third parties and advertisers. This is the setting here on Safari on the Macintosh. This is the setting that was the default setting on iOS. When that is turned on iOS, companies like Google can't put plus one buttons on other sites, including ads, because that would involve setting a cookie, a third-party cookie. So it breaks that mechanism. Google found a way using an iframe and hidden cookies.
What it was is if you're filling out a form on a web page, Safari will let the third-party cookie work.
So they pretended to be a form.
Essentially, Google had a form you never even saw was there. And they were only doing it, they said, in order to let the plus one button work. But by doing that, they also let the advertising cookies work, which they said they did by accident. Google's stance is that they did mean to do the workaround, but they only intended it to do it for the plus one button for people who were logged in who presumably wanted it to be there. And by accident, the advertising
by
part
accident.
Also worked.
I'm sorry, but the smartest people in the world by accident.
Google's been using an excuse an awful lot. They downloaded Street View data by accident.
They've been apologizing for a lot of stuff lately.
Yeah.
However, John Battelle makes a really – now, admittedly, John Battelle is an advertising guy. He owns Federated Media, one of the biggest blog advertising agencies in the world. He makes the point that, in fact, Apple, in this policy, is breaking the free web. And remember, a lot of what we get for free. Google's free. Facebook's free. We get it for free because we allow them to advertise to us. And and that's kind of the unspoken tit-for-tat on free websites. He says Apple is really not doing this to protect people's privacy. They're doing it to protect their own ad platform, that they don't want third-party ads to work because they want you to buy iAds. They want to be the only people who know who's using iOS.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I admit John Battelle has an axe to grind in this because he's one of those ad people. But I have to say it does make the story sound more complicated than it is.
So what if they're doing that? I mean, they're breaking the web. They don't want to participate. They've never been like
that. But they're not telling their users that we're going to break the web.
They're saying we want, this is our rules and this is our rule.
They're not saying it. They're doing it without telling people.
I don't remember. I have Safari on my iPhone. I don't remember ever signing an agreement or acknowledging that these are the rules. This is the default browser on all of the iOS devices.
But defaults are set on Facebook. Defaults are set on everyone. So you didn't agree to any of the people.
But it's a piece of software. It's not a service. There's no terms of service. I didn't sign a TOS when you can change it, that's the thing.
And you can change it.
That's absolutely right. It is a setting.
And you can change it. Facebook gave me defaults when I signed in. I didn't do a lot of picking. I'm just saying it's just like these are all side arguments to the point, which is how much of this stuff should be completely selectable right at the beginning and at every time.
But the other argument is what harm is being done and what choice do users have? I am a big supporter of giving users the choice to opt out of third-party cookies. But I just think, yeah, maybe Google screwed up, maybe Google, but I don't think it was this nefarious, hidden plot to steal personal information from Larry Magid and Kara Swisher.
I would agree with you on that.
They don't know you're Larry. They can just sort of tell where your browser has been, but they're not tying it back to your identity.
And I don't get that 15 seconds of fame. They don't know who I am.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Larry.
Okay.
So
I think the bigger point is all these people are making tons of money off of you, and you don't have as much say as you can. These people, all of them, none of them are clean. Not John Battelle, not Apple, not Google, not Facebook by any means. And so they're all making money off of these users. I would love, frankly, to be paid for all this, access to my cookies or whatever, putting cookies. But none of them are clean, but all this trickery between them is just exhausting to the consumer.
I feel, though, a little bit like people are acting like Louis in Casablanca. My God, there's gambling occurring.
We're on the internet.
We're using free services like Google and Facebook. They're showing us ads. The way they monetize, all this going on about, oh, my God, Pinterest is making money with links, with affiliate links. Oh, my God. Well, what did you think? You don't get something for nothing. And, we show ads. We're up front. We show you an ad. We don't collect information on you, but we show you an ad. I just think that's kind of, that's how this stuff works.
Right.
Doesn't everybody know that? Maybe I'm wrong.
In fact, in broadcasting, which I'm also part of, we interrupt the program to show you an ad.
Yeah, we're much worse.
So at least with these sites, you can get to continue to do what you're doing. Sometimes they interrupt as well, but I think it's really important. I mean, there are some people that have suggested that if you want to turn off your third-party cookies, that's great, but now you have to pay for the content. So you have a choice. Do you allow them to monetize their sites by targeting ads directly to you, or do you pay for the content? And maybe that's a choice that we should all be able to make.
I think the big problem for Google is not this. It's that this is like about the 10th example in the last 10 years of Google having to apologize. Remember their vans that were driving around taking pictures for Street View? It turned out they were accidentally collecting information from open Wi-Fi networks, and they apologized for that. And somebody at Google was also stealing information from a Kenyan competitor. So there have been a lot of things they've had to apologize for. And once upon a time, Google had this reputation of being above commercialism. And that's kind
of
gone.
That was never true.
Yeah,
that was
course.
Never true.
Reputation.
Not for a minute was that true. I was there when they got funded, and they were always like this. They wanted to suck up every bit of information and use it. That is such a myth of Google. I mean, they believe – now, this is the issue with Facebook, with Mark Zuckerberg and everybody else. They have a conception of privacy that is possibly different from other people's, and they believe because they can do it and it's possible and it will somehow benefit people, it's the right thing. And so that's just the issue.
But the reality, they have untold power
on these things.
If Google wants to invade your privacy, my gosh, they read your mail anyway if you're on Gmail.
We have to.
If you don't trust Google, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
They know more about me than my bank does. I mean, it's incredible.
I hope not. I hope they're not reading mine.
Well,
they're scanning it, but so is Microsoft with Hotmail. So is Yahoo. If you have an anti-spam protection of any kind, your mail is being scanned at least for spam keywords.
Well, Gmail has these ads that pop up contextually. They don't bother me.
By the way, this is the Wall Street Journal page. This is a little plugin called Ghostery that's running on Firefox that shows you what tracking programs are used on any given page. It's fun to look at. In this case, there are 11 tracking programs. Let me close that window. There are 11 tracking programs, including Audience Science, Bezo, BlueKai, Chartbeat, DoubleClick, DoubleClick Spotlight. Both of those are Google companies. Facebook Connect, Gravity Insights, Microsoft Atlas, MSN Ads, and Targus Info. All of these are, just from going to the front page of the journal, which, by the way, charges money for access to the content. So I just feel like this is normal. As you said, Kara, this is normal process. I do think that Apple is being a little... Well, they didn't say anything in this, but I think it's a little disingenuous to imply that Apple is somehow protecting our privacy when, in fact, they may well be protecting their own commercial interests.
Apple did say they wanted to stop us.
Yeah, they did. By the way, in defense of the journal, there are two issues that we need. First of all, I believe Julie and her co-author did disclose in the article that the journal does this.
They did.
And second of all, there's a long-standing tradition of separation between
right.
the editorial people bitching
and
about what the commercial people are doing. I mean, we do that all the time in broadcast media.
So what it does bring up also this other thing, which is very much current now. Well, you could do anything you want as long as you disclose. Is that what
and
we're
apologize
saying?
Too. Don't
disclose,
to apologize.
Apologize.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm not wearing pants right now, obviously. But
thanks for the disclosure.
I am.
No, I don't care one way or the other, but I just... There's some things one need not disclose. No, but does it make it? And this is the same thing in journalism. Is hey, I can own stock in anything I want as long as I tell you.
Not that anybody.
Actually, there are some
not that anybody would do that.
But that's another.
We'll get to. I don't know if we even want to cover that. So what is the bottom line then on this? Did Google do wrong, Kara? Bye bye. She not only disclosed she's not wearing any pants, she hung up on us. No, we'll get that fixed. That's a Skype issue. We'll call it right back. Did Google do wrong, Larry?
I think technically they did something wrong, but I don't think it was the worst sin ever committed by a company, and definitely not the worst sin ever committed by Google. They do other things that are wrong.
They've done worse. Is that your explanation?
Yeah, they've done worse.
They've done worse.
They've done worse, yeah. But I think it's a little bit overblown, frankly.
How about you, Harry? What do you think?
Well, they weren't tracking iPhones. It's not the worst thing they've done. But, again, it's kind of this critical mass of things they have to apologize for, which is dangerous. If Google goes from people thinking that they're kind of plain to not being sure to people assuming the worst about Google, that's kind of one of the few things that really could threaten Google's business.
Well, and in fact, the FTC said we're investigating.
Yep.
So the
Congress
government
is upset.
Congress wants them to explain again. It is certainly a black mark.
I think they were sloppy, and with something like this, they really don't have any.
All right, I'm going to say something,
sloppy.
And Kara, you can completely shoot me down on this. But what if Rupert Murdoch, who hates Google, who thinks Google's stealing him blind because they're linking to his articles? What if Rupert Murdoch is telling the Wall Street Journal, "Go get Google," and by the way, let's make sure there's an FTC investigation. You think that's impossible? I don't know. We're still working on Kara.
I fear. Oh no, I should.
Yeah. She is wearing pants.
I am wearing pants. I'm going to put on the better wireless just in case.
You sound good. Anyway.
Okay.
So I'll ask the question. We got cut off. Is Google... what did I ask? Is Google wrong here?
Well, you asked if Google was wrong. You also asked if Rupert...
And maybe Rupert.
...personally calling up the journal and making sure that they're doing this as part of his vendetta. And not that Rupert would ever do anything unethical or anybody in his company, ever.
That's crazy. I'm sorry.
Well, you know
Leo
better.
Said it. Leo.
You know him better than I do, and I'm just raising the issue. And so you don't
never
would happen.
Never happen to me. Never wouldn't happen. He does some stuff in Britain that's being under investigation, but not the journal. Not in my experience of the journal.
Not Julia Angwin isn't gonna take a call from Rupert and say, "Okay, yeah, Rupe, we'll go on this one." No, obviously not.
Zero.
So you don't get a memo every day from him.
Not more. I guess they don't send it to me. But
I think the journal reporters did a service by raising this. No matter what your conclusions are, ultimately, I'm glad we know about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And did Google do wrong, Kara?
I think this concept, I mean, first of all, the federal implications, the federal regulatory implications, they've been under the watch of government regulators who are pretty much toothless for the most part on every kind of issue like this. But I think it hurt itself again. Once again, it calls into question its things. I think it definitely hurt itself because it has a different conception. If you spend time with these people, they have a very different conception of what could be done. Just because they can do it, they do it. And they think it, they really do. I don't believe they sit in a room and Larry Page has a lair somewhere like Dr. Evil. But, there's an element to they can do it and why not? And, you know, I'm married to a Google executive and I was reading this piece and I said, I can't believe this again. And, you know, she went right into the technical. Well, technically, da, 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 and it was a total disconnect on why it would bother someone to be tracked. And so it's just a conceptual leap for these kind of geeks or technical people who think it's fine. So
it's kind of like you think it's like the PATH situation where it wasn't nefarious, but they just didn't get it.
Yeah, I think they got it. I just don't think it occurs to them. They don't mind sharing. They don't. Right. You know what I mean? It's just I think there's malevolence on the part of lots of people in this world. And in some cases, a lot of these advertising people and tracking people, they know just what they're doing, and it's very tricky. In this case, it's a conceptual difference between certain internet people who are making their businesses doing this and others. And it's just. I just don't know. I don't think you can. I think they're going to keep pushing the lines. That's what they do. That's what Facebook does. It's not just Google. It's Facebook. It's Path. It's Pinterest. It's all of them. This is how they operate and how they think, and this is their worldview.
I mean, Kara, I know you've interviewed Mark Zuckerberg as a buy, and I mean, I truly believe that he also is not doing his privacy violations for evil purposes. I mean, it's the way he looks at the world, and I think it's the way that
I actually share some of that worldview. Third-party cookies, they don't bug me. And I also feel like if I'm on the internet, I'm sharing stuff. So if you don't like it, get off the internet. I mean, that's not much of a choice, but I mean, it's just the fact of the matter. Internet. When you're surfing around on the internet, your ISP knows what you're doing. Everybody knows what you're doing. It's a mistake to think that you're wandering around the internet anonymously unless you are sophisticated enough to take some serious measures.
Remember that New Yorker cartoon from the 90s on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog?
They know exactly what breed
network,
you are.
In social networking, right, everybody knows you're a dog.
They know what breed you are, what kind of Alpo you like. Exactly. They know it all. And I guess that's the message. You know, I talk to a lot of normal people on the radio show. As you do.
Yeah, normal.
The message, normal, like non-techie people. And I guess that's the message is that I give them, and I don't know what you do, Larry, but what I kind of say is, look, you should never think that what you're doing is private on the internet. People are making these free services are not really free. You are trading personal information to these services and attention to advertisement to these services, just as you are paying attention to television advertisements for free TV and radio and all that. And that's the deal. And if you don't like it, okay. But
there was a great story in the New York Times this week about China. And if you bring your computer in there or even a cell phone or anything else, they grab it and they put, spying software on there very easily, even if you're just using the internet.
They didn't do that to me. I was there 2 years ago. That must be something new.
You don't know if they did it, actually. Some of these companies, which are very technical companies, I forget it was Nortel or some group of companies, they had stuff in there they didn't know that was in there for years and years. It was tracking all kinds of things. It's a fantastic New York Times.
When did they take my laptop? Because I had it in my possession at all times.
No, they didn't
take it. They may have installed it.
When you're on their networks, they were able to install things. It was really interesting, and it was highly technical, but these people had laptops that came back to the U.S. for a year or two. Hmm. They didn't realize there was problems with it. So it can become malevolent really quickly.
Sure.
So that's, China's like in all kinds of, talk about a country that spies. But, I mean, all the countries spy. But this was a story that was just, it showed you the negative side of this possibility that could happen.
Well, and as somebody in the chat room said quite accurately, to say you can't be, if you don't want to be in public, don't be on the internet isn't really fair either, because nowadays you need to be on the internet to participate in government, to participate in anything.
But I think in terms of social media, what I tell people is, don't put it on Facebook if you wouldn't want to share it with your grandmother and put it on the front page of the New York
That's
Times.
That's what I tell people,
regardless of your privacy settings.
Yes.
Because even if Facebook is perfect, one of your friends could easily copy and paste it.
Exactly. So I say that exact same thing. And I would extend it maybe past Facebook nowadays, right?
Of course.
Nobody else is going to protect you. It is really your responsibility. It's like your house. I mean,
but I have to say, is it your responsibility that cars weren't safe 10 years ago? You know what I mean? When they didn't have the right, there is responsibility on the part of these internet companies, just the way car companies got dinged for seatbelts and all kinds of things. They're selling a service. They're selling or providing a service, and they have a certain responsibilities to keep them safe in some
fashion.
I agree with you. It's different than a car company.
And I agree with you, and it's one of the reasons why I think Facebook even still ought to have better and clearer privacy policies. But at the end of the day, if you decide to take your car with your seatbelts and your airbag and then drive 150 miles an hour, down the street,
you can bypass
still kill yourself.
Right.
And you might die anyway, even if you drive safely.
That's different from what the car companies were doing or the cigarette companies.
I agree.
Were doing. It's the same thing. They have a certain responsibility, and they've lost in court, so it doesn't really matter. That's the way our country has come down on these issues.
So it's a partnership.
The
user has to be responsible, and the companies have to be responsible. Mostly, the companies have to be honest. And I think that what really bothers a lot of people is this question about whether we are being lied to, whether we're being tricked or deceived. The banks do it all the time, right? I mean, or certainly one of the reasons they've been, there's all these regulations in place. And, you know, are these companies doing what they're saying they're doing? Is their privacy policy what it says it is? And is it written clearly? And I don't think we're there yet.
I think, Carrie, you convinced me. I think you're right. I think that these companies have a responsibility. We're in the infancy of this. And just as in early days of cars, we didn't know what we needed to do. But we know, as we learn, these companies do have a responsibility to upgrade their policies.
And it's in their best interest to do so, too.
Because they don't want government regulation.
I would much rather that they tried to play on us than that a bunch of Congress critters stepped in who know nothing about any of this stuff.
Right.
So what does it look like, then, in a world where these companies are truly responsible? Is it just – I mean, the problem – we've also seen this – is disclosure fatigue. I mean, the number of – this was the issue with Path. I mean, you're going to start putting up pop-ups every time you do anything? What – So what? How does it look, Carol? In your mind, what does it look like in a world?
I think it looks like plain English. I'd urge you to go look at our ethical disclosures, our cookie disclosures, everything else. They're written in plain English, and they give people ability. Here, you can go here to get rid of these. Here is a way you can get rid of them. And you give them. Everyone knows what plain English is. Everyone pretends they don't. You know. I think it's very clear. You don't have to treat people like children. It's not a mommy state where you have to like. Tell everybody everything, but on certain critical moments when they have to say yes or no, people should be able to say yes or no. That's all. And if it's annoying, it's annoying. But that's, you know, I think they could say, here's a global one for our service, and we'll check in with you once a year or twice a year or whatever. It's not that onerous. It's not that, you know, come on.
All Things D is almost the only site on the entire internet that does it right because you get that huge message up top.
You do. It's huge. It's huge.
It's enormous.
But it's in plain English.
And that's I don't know of any other site issue. That does that.
Yeah. And I like that all your writers have a disclosure. I think that's really great.
It's important.
Up front.
Yeah. You know,
how many people, do you have stats on how many people read those?
They have to. They have to. I don't know if they read them.
It's impossible to miss.
They don't have to. It's impossible to miss. And they, of course, they can click the X. Our X is normal size X, so they can do that. But they have to at least see it and do something with it. And it's rather large. It's not just two or three sentences. It's a pretty large square there. And again, we do it anytime we make even a slight change, like the social, we just did a bunch of social media changes and we inform people about it. And I'm not like better than thou. It's not like that. It's not that hard. It wasn't like particularly difficult. And it doesn't, there's a blue one too. There's a blue one we do for social media stuff. And we do different colors and just so it's apparent. And then it's not, you know, and then it clicks in what you can do to get rid of them. Like, not just, you don't just give them the rules. You say, if you don't like this, this is what you can do to get rid of them. Here's sites that will explain it to you.
Now, you have a fairly, in fact, you have a highly sophisticated audience. You think that would work? That kind of thing would work on Facebook. It would work on Google Plus. It would work.
Google's sort of trying to do it with the message about the changes in their privacy policies, which are, you know, are quite large, and I'm seeing all over every Google service.
I feel like it's almost like, you know, whenever you walk into a building in California now, it says Proposition 65, warning, there's hazardous chemicals being used in here. And after a point, nobody sees that sign
ever leaves,
right?
Because of that.
I remember...
Yeah, but the cigarette signs were on the cigarettes.
And they don't work.
Yes, they do. Yes, they're there. If they weren't, yes, you don't realize they work, but they do. If you're not a teenager who sees them every time or the kid that looks at them, they should be there. And that's just the way it is.
I'm not convinced that they have reduced teenage smoking.
So take them off? I don't know. There's only so much you can do. There's only so much you can do to protect people, but you certainly can give them warnings.
You at least need to give them the chance.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not a mommy. I don't like the mommy state either. I'm not, you know, even though I live here in San Francisco and they have...
The headquarters
of Mommy State. I don't like being told what to do by the federal government all the time, but in certain areas, it's prudent for them to do that. Seems to me, it's not that big a deal.
Well, I think the FTC is going to require Google to do something, and I think that's probably not inappropriate. Certainly, knowledge is power, and we should know what's going on. Mm-hmm. I think we've come to an agreement here.
Right.
Let's move on. We are going to in just a second, but first, I'm going to talk a little bit about Ford. Kara Swisher is here from allthingsd.com, Larry Magid from CBS, and from Time Magazine. I like saying that. Harry McCracken. Our show is brought to you by Ford Motor Company. If you go to ford.com/technology, you can see all the amazing stuff Ford is doing to improve your experience driving. And we've talked a lot about electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles, but, you know, there are many people in the country who still drive and need to drive gas engines because it's the only way you can get, you know, 300 miles from point A to point B. And one of the things Ford has done that I think is fantastic is work very hard to improve modern engine technology to give you power, torque, and fuel efficiency. And the EcoBoost engine is really the flagship in all of this. I drove the SHO when I shopped for my Mustang, and I was just really impressed that a car like the Taurus SHO could have such a pickup. And it's a V6, but it performs like a V8, and that's all that EcoBoost engine. Right now they have 2-liter EcoBoost engines in the 2012 Explorer and Edge. And it's amazing to have a car like an Explorer that gives you the gas economy of a small car with the performance of a big car. Or the new 2013 Escape coming in the spring that will offer the 1.6-liter as well as the 2-liter EcoBoost engines. Read up here on how EcoBoost works. It's actually kind of interesting if you're into car technology. Dual injection, producing a cooler, denser charge. Direct injection. It's actually on every cylinder. So that would be like 4, 6, or 8 injection. Produces more power per drop of fuel. And then it's interesting, they're turbocharged, but instead of one big turbocharger, which takes a while to spool up, they got two smaller ones. What they do is they take energy from the gas exhaust, which would otherwise be wasted, to rotate these turbine wheels. That compresses the air, the incoming air, again, increasing power and performance and gas mileage. Very impressive stuff. Find out more if you go to Ford.com/technology. If you're interested in this stuff, it's actually quite fascinating what these engineers are doing. EPA estimated 28 highway miles per gallon in the 2.0-liter EcoBoost. 28. For a large utility vehicle, that's amazing. Ford.com/technology. Better yet, drive one at a Ford dealer today. Mobile app revenue set to soar to $46 billion in 2016. Apple's about to close in on, what was it? I forgot. 25 billion downloads? Is that the number?
It's either 20 or 25, yeah.
And we saw last week that the mobile economy is several hundred thousand jobs over the last few years. That's really a change in the landscape in technology, isn't it? Apps are where, I don't think it's surprising to hear it, but apps are where it's at.
Absolutely. And globally, even more so. You know, you go to Africa and most parts of the world, and people don't even have PCs. They've got mobile phones and mostly kind of the old ones, but smartphones are coming on strong. I think that clearly that is the growth area. I think everybody in tech knows it, and we're just beginning. We're just at the early stages of that explosion.
The appification of everything.
I mean, there are people who predict it will all crumble because eventually it'll just be the web, not apps.
Well, I'm kind of a fan of the open web and not so much of apps. It feels like, who was it? Was it Virginia Heffernan writing in the Times who likened them to a gated community? You know?
Well, then you come back to this whole question of if it's just the web, how do you make money? You make money with advertising.
Oh, that.
How do you do advertising?
Cookies.
You put in tracking cookies.
Yeah.
The nice thing about apps is, you know, most of them at least, if they're fee-based, you know what you're giving up.
There's some revenue
model. You're giving up 99 cents or $2.99 or whatever.
Although apps, too, there's a disclosure, right, when you install them that we know everything about you. We've got your location. Right. We're uploading your address book.
And nobody pays
attention to those either.
And there was that story also within the last couple of weeks about
the path.
About path and the fact that your address book on your iPhone was one of the few things that Apple was not willing off.
There was such a brouhaha over path, and then when it came out, the Twitter not only has been doing it, but storing it for 18 months. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like, I guess we were fatigued.
Right.
It's like, well, I guess everybody does it now.
Right. I think in the case of Path, though, apparently there wasn't a disclosure. And I can't recall whether Twitter has a disclosure.
I believe you had to go to the Find Your Friends feature. Yeah. So at least you had some.
Well, you did on Path as well. Yeah. You had to locate. I believe in Path it was the same thing where you had to say, I want to find my friends in my contact list.
I never do that. I do not want a service spamming my friends.
It doesn't spam.
Sometimes they do. There are some that do. There are some services that will send a note like Larry.
Yeah, that's reprehensible.
Oh yeah, no, it happens.
Pinterest has been accused of playing fast and loose with that.
Yeah. Well, remember Plaxo?
Right, exactly.
Oh boy, that was fun. You'd sign up for Plaxo, and everybody would know. Several times.
But I mean, this whole issue that your address book is being uploaded to a server and you don't know it's there and it's staying there for a year and a half. I was kind of personally upset by that. I'm not particularly surprised, but quite upset that seems to be a reasonably common occurrence.
I'm going to ask the question because I'm sure, Kara, you'll have something Picant.
Yes, I'm doing my Dr. Evil impression.
You got the cat, so it's too bad the cat has fur, because otherwise it would be just perfect. I'm just curious. There was a little to-do on the internet after this PATH thing in which M.G. Siegler said, the state of tech journalism is terrible. Yeah. And I have to say, when fake Dan Lyons, he's real. He's the fake Steve Jobs, but he is the real Dan Lyons, wrote his article in which he compared MG to a particularly vicious ankle-biting dog.
Maddie the angry chihuahua.
And it was just, it just got very bitter in there for a little while.
Yes, it did. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now you and I have been practicing, and Larry and Harry have been practicing the fine art of technology journalism for a little longer than those guys.
Yeah.
And I felt a little insulted that MG comes in, and I know MG, and I like MG, comes in, messes around, and then says, I actually said it's like a kid who pees in the pool then jumps out because it's yellow.
That's a very good analogy. You know, it's not he sort of went into that he's the Edward R. Murrow of our time. That's why I think a lot of journalists reacted, is because the person, one of the people more responsible for some of the practices of which he was disdaining was the one that was telling us they were wrong now, that he wasn't doing it anymore. And it was a little disingenuous, I would guess. I think that's, and then Dan went, crazy on it, which was funny. It was a very funny piece. It was a little pointed, but it was funny. There's no question about it. And so I think Dan...
A little pointed. The name of the piece was Hitmen, Click Whores, and Paid Apologists. Welcome to the Silicon Cesspool.
yeah, exactly.
A little pointed.
He's known for that. He's taken aim at me many times. Oh. It's usually funny. It's usually incredibly funny and sometimes cruel.
Let me ask you this, because it felt... I'm curious what all of you think. He posed in a very kind of... funny way, of course, that that this is what happened with TechCrunch and paid content and others. First, you establish yourself as an influencer by posting a lot of noisy stuff on a blog and building an audience. Then you need to monetize your influence. You tell all the VCs in the Valley you're starting an angel fund, and you ask each one to give you, $500,000. They go along because $500,000 is pocket change, and you're an influential hack, and they don't want to piss you off. And they figure maybe you could write some nice things about their portfolio companies, which would be useful in case you get caught in, a scandal like PATH did. And then if any independent journalist writes something critical about one of the VC's portfolio companies, you can use your influential personal blog to savagely attack those journalists and try to discredit them. He says basically that's what happened. That's what the crunch fund was. And that's why all the defense from Arrington and MG, both of whom are investors, angel investors in PATH, came to their defense. How accurate do you think that is?
I don't know. In the case of PATH, I had issues with the crunch fund. I was very well quoted calling it a giant Silicon Valley pig pile, greed pig pile. But that's another issue. I don't know. In this case, I have no idea. I didn't do the reporting, so I can't say whether there was linkage. I think these guys like to pop off no matter what.
Yeah, that's true. That's their defense. We'd be saying the same thing no matter if we're paid or not.
The only thing is they haven't been popping off of late. Maybe they've been sleeping or something like that. I have no idea. I have no idea why they picked this one over others, and I have no idea why MG Ziegler went into a big diatribe about the state of journalism. I have no idea why he did it now.
And slammed his friend. Now, by the way, I know all these guys, and I like them all, and I'm friends with them all. And Nick Bilton, we tried to get Nick Bilton on the show. He wouldn't come. But Nick was the guy who wrote the New York Times article, and MG slamming. It just was like I felt like we were in a Mexican crossfire going on.
I think Nick was surprised. I've had dinner with him since. I think, to describe him as surprised would be probably pretty accurate.
Now, admittedly, and I think that there's influence with Dan Lyons as well. There's, MG says, well, Dan and I, we got a history. TechCrunch and Dan have a history. But then you look at somebody like Sarah Lacey, a TechCrunch author who left TechCrunch to found a fund. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what it is. She got investment from how many different...
No. She got... That's a little different. She didn't form a fund. She has a website a tech news website whose funders are a lot of VCs, a lot of well-known people.
See, that to me seems problematic.
Dan had some... It can be. I think I'm going to take Sarah at her word that she's not influenced by them. And it's so far, I haven't seen... a gigantic amount of like cheerleading for them. So I don't, you know, I think.
But is that how we judge this? Is like we would look at their writing and say, oh, well, they seem objective.
I don't know what to say about Sarah. I mean, everybody needs funders. I mean, I have Rupert Murdoch as our funder. You know what I mean? Like, so in that case, it's a little different than creating the Crunch Fund, which is a VC fund funded by people. It's a different, you know, and also running a website. That was the issue there. That was the, so that's very clear kind of thing. And in this case, Dan thinks it's a problem. I haven't seen it so far. Of course, people can think it's a problem. It's definitely something to worry about. But it's a question of whether she should have taken money from traditional media funders. I don't know. I just don't know in her case. But again, it pulls another issue into a different issue, and then it confuses. And that's their goal, is to make the whole thing such a mess that we can't put... You can't separate these things. Well, Sarah Lacey has very little to do with this. This has to do with issues around the Crunch Fund and
But
that
Pando
kind of stuff.
Daily is covering the companies that invested in her.
Right, but I mean, when Technologizer was a standalone site, I had ads from HP and Samsung.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Without those ads, the site wouldn't have existed.
And I don't think
but this is a step beyond that.
Well, that's always true.
That's true, but I think, you know, ultimately the money is coming from somewhere, and it's often coming from somebody who is involved in the industry you're covering.
Right, but the question
exactly.
is, I mean, if as long as you're covering it straight, I mean, you know, there's that old the proverbial Chinese wall. I mean, every publication except for
well, the
PR,
problem with blogs these days is there isn't a Chinese wall because it's such a small operation. We have that problem here. I mean, I would love to have a Chinese wall between advertising and editorial, but you're not a big company. You
right,
can't
but the
do
point,
that.
No, you just threw out a Ford ad. That's great, but you're not sitting here in the editorial portion of this show. Going
well, I'm
going to
do some
way.
Tech companies ads too.
Right,
in
but
a
I mean,
bit.
But the difference is, but everybody knows it's an ad. We understand
well,
the
that's,
difference.
That's kind of my
an
point.
Ad and Leo's personal opinion.
That's kind of my point. Yeah.
As long as it's clear. I don't have a big problem with that. Sometimes it gets fuzzy.
I think ultimately Pando Daily will, you know, live or die based on whether its readers think it has any credibility or not. That you can live without it.
So again, you have to look at the content and say, well,
and that's true of every site.
But again, I think the issue is why bring that into this. I think Dan made a mistake in bringing that in that he had an argument with them, and I think it was a good argument that he was making. And then you just muck up the whole thing, and then it becomes a giant global fight over everything.
It was
and I
pretty
think
ugly.
We could sort it out. Like, there are issues of running a fund and running a tech news site at the same time. In my opinion, that is a problem. I wrote about it very loudly. You know, this in a lecture from M.G. Ziegler on journalism is something I'd rather, you know, I want to like poke my eye out listening to him telling me about journalism. But that's different. You know what I mean? Like, that's different. I don't feel he has the stance to
say
something.
I think there's a bigger problem. Maybe the term click whore is the proper term. But it bothers me a little bit that blogs and journalists are incentivized strictly in some cases to get as many hits as possible. I spent 18 years writing for the LA Times back in the print world, and I had no idea how many people were reading my pieces, obviously. They had some vague notion of how popular it was, or they would have fired me probably a year or two into it. But the bottom line is that I was not pandering to how many eyeballs I could reach for each story I wrote. Now, there are blogs, I'll tell you, Forbes actually pays per click.
Wow.
And so you have this incentive
wow.
to get eyeballs. And
that's,
you know,
that's
and,
scary.
And I think this is accurate, but two people from TechCrunch told me this. They're paid by how much time they get on Tech Meme, which is fine. I guess we don't, for example, on our site, I won't give our staff the traffic numbers. They want to see them, but I think it'll affect
thing.
Them in some fashion.
Yeah.
I just don't tell them. And I know what it is, but I don't change their coverage based on it. But it's really hard not to do that, and you have to really discipline yourself not to.
Well, Carrie,
not pay people based on traffic.
Have you ever written a story that you think is very important because for whatever reason, and then you wrote another story that perhaps is less important but actually got far more hits?
All the time.
I mean, it happens to me all the time.
And yes, I did a story once that just said Apple Twitter funding. I did it as a joke.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean?
Lots
and
of
it
hits.
Just was lots of hits. You know what I mean? And, you know, I had just talked to one of our writers who was like, well, I didn't like a story because I thought it was by one single analyst. It wasn't kind of thing. And they said, well, it did really well. And I said, are you listening to what I'm telling you? I don't want it. You know what I mean? So you have to really, people are human and they want to be read. And so you have to spend a lot of time saying, you know, that's great if something gets read, but at the same time, the quality should be first. That should be first on a quality site.
It's a very natural human thing. Now that we know, you see, when you're in mainstream media, you don't really know directly. I don't know how many people respond to any individual story on this show, for instance. I couldn't know that. But with the blog, you know exactly how many eyeballs each and every piece got. And so that information, having known that, it's hard. It's like it's Pandora's box. Once you've opened the box, you can't.
I have to say, when I worked at PC World in the 1990s, when the web was just getting underway, every single month for the print magazine, we did a reader survey, and the readers would say what they read.
Magazines have done that for years,
and we distributed that to all the editors, and a small amount of their compensation was based on that. So we were essentially trying to do it before.
It goes way back.
You could measure it. I should also say, I think MG is completely right that 90% of tech journalism is crap, but that, you know, it's Sturgeon's law.
It's always been that way.
Sturgeon's law is that 90% of everything is crap.
Right.
It was also true of print tech journalism back in the day, probably.
Right.
But ideally, the stuff that's really good ultimately does rise to the top. And I think on the web, some crap does rise to the top, but I think the good stuff also rises to the top. And for the most part, the stuff that does well on Tech Meme is stuff that's worth reading.
All right, we're going to talk about some real news.
Yes, this was real news.
Enough of that. Enough inside baseball.
Right.
Let's talk about Apple and Mountain Lion and other stuff in just a little bit. How about that? We could talk about
Sounds
Mountain
good.
Lion. But first, a word from the folks at Citrix, who make Go to My PC remote access. We've talked about it so many times before. It's just fantastic to be able to access your office computer as you're on the road. Even more exciting now, you could do it from your iPhone, your iPad, your Android tablet. So, you know, perfect scenario happens to me fairly frequently. I'm on the way to the airport, got a tight connection, I got to get there right away, and I forgot something, right? Now, if it's my suitcase, I'm out of luck. But if it's my PowerPoint presentation, I literally get to the airport, open my iPhone, log into my office computer. There it is. That's pretty amazing. Go to My PC lets you access your Mac or PC from anywhere using all of these devices, and you could try it free right now if you visit gotomypc.com and use the offer code TWIT. If you've not used this, you got to give it a try. Particularly useful in an environment where security is important, where reliability is important. Businesses use Go to My PC all the time. If you care about using the best, the fastest, most effective, and yes, absolutely secure tool, 128-bit SSL at all times. Because they use NAT traversal, you don't have to do any port forwarding or mess around with your firewalls. You are not exposing yourself. It's just great. I love it. And now on the iPhone and the iPad, there's something wild about using Windows 7 on your iPhone. It's cool. Try it. Go to mypc.com, click the try it free button right there. And all you need is the word TWIT as your offer code, your name, your email address, and TWIT, and you're going to have that for 30 days of unlimited use. GOTOMYPC.com. Give it a try today. I don't know if this is something Steve Jobs would have done or if this is a new Apple, but they kind of snuck Mountain Lion out. 6 in the morning on Thursday. All of a sudden, I thought it was a joke.
Yeah.
Everybody on Twitter saying, Mountain Lion, Mountain Lion. I thought, what? They did give access to a few tame journalists. Did you get early access or did Walt get early access to?
My speaker's not working again. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can
you hear me? We hear you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Walt wrote a piece right away. Didn't Walt get access to Mountain Lion?
No, he didn't. He hasn't written a story because he's reviewing it.
You know, interesting.
Well, it takes actual time to use something rather than coming out with a 4-second interview.
Well, no, but some people did get time. John Gruber got at least a week.
I was briefed.
Ina Fried was briefed. You were briefed?
Yes.
Yeah.
About a week ahead of time.
Briefed, but I think Walt's going to take time and do his normal review time, I suspect. He doesn't tell me what he's reviewing, actually.
Well, and the truth is, this is a early beta anyway, so it's reviewing
not,
it is kind of...
It's not a review. It's kind of first impressions of an early version.
Right.
That does not have all the features yet.
So when did you find out about it?
About a week ahead of time.
Like everybody else.
A few days before that.
Did Phil Schiller come to your house like he did John Gruber's?
I think Phil and John actually met in a hotel room in New York. I did not meet with Phil Schiller. I met with some other Apple folks at Apple headquarters.
New York Times is a little miffed. I don't want to get back into this journalism story again. Pogue did write a piece, but the New York Times... Post reports the New York Times is angry because of their iEconomy series, which was kind of Apple did not take well to, that they didn't get access to the early briefing.
Well, except David Pogue was briefed.
He was, wasn't he? Time. Yeah, so I don't know what this means. I don't know what this means. Mountain Lion, I think the bigger story really is starting to look like iOS.
Right.
Mountain
now,
Lion
you're,
is,
I'm seeing you are sitting here with an iPad and a keyboard.
Yes.
Do you not use a laptop anymore? Is
about 20% of the time I use a laptop, and about 80% I use the iPad. Actually, it will be an interesting test, because now that I'm working with Time, I'm going to have to integrate myself into their big company systems.
But I see Mike Elgin doing the same thing. There are a lot of people now who just don't use. Is this the future of computing, is tablets?
I think an operating system like iOS is closer to the future than something like Windows or Mountain Lion. I still like a keyboard.
Is it reading the tea leaves to say that Apple took the word Mac off OS X?
No, because I can't remember anybody at Apple calling it Mac OS X for the last several years. I think that was just sort of formalizing.
If you do About This Mac on my Mac, it says Mac OS X. If I had Mountain Lion installed, there's no Mac there.
Right.
Just as Apple dropped computers from the company name.
I'm actually a little disturbed by this trend. So I was really pleased when Lion came out, and I think it's true with Mountain Lion as well, that you don't have to use the iPad interface if you don't want to. But I like you, I carry around a MacBook Air, which weighs not much more than the keyboard iPad combination that Harry has. And among the many reasons why I carry this, or an Ultrabook sometimes, over an iPad, is because multiple windows open, a vast library of productive software that I want access to, a really good keyboard, et cetera, et cetera. And Harry, I respect you for having figured out a way to get your work done on the iPad. But for the one thing I don't want to give up is the windowing interface. And I'm using window with a small W here to be able to have multiple windows. I really like the traditional menus that Apple and some Windows programs have. In fact, I'm disturbed that Microsoft got rid of the menus on Microsoft Office. I actually like them. Maybe I'm old-fashioned.
When Windows 8 comes out, Microsoft is, in a way that Apple is not doing, Microsoft is really going to want you to move to this new wave interface.
Metro.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting. Both Microsoft and Apple are effectively saying we feel that the future of computing is a tablet-style computer.
Right. Although they're taking different approaches because Microsoft is really betting everything on Metro, which is very much like Windows Phone. And with Mountain Lion, most of the stuff that's new, if you don't like it, you can kind of ignore it, and you still get your desktop.
Oh, you will be able to run traditional apps on Windows 8. You don't have to run Metro.
But the traditional apps are kind of off on the side, and the traditional desktop is off on the side.
Yeah.
Microsoft is trying to make a great leap forward. Apple is not really making a great leap forward so much as taking little bits and pieces of iOS and bringing them in. And then I'm not sure I think both approaches are valid, and it'll be interesting to see which one's out in the long run.
I worry because I like you, Larry, like a desktop experience. I mean, well, it's laptop, but I like that experience, the multi-windows. I just like the flexibility of it. And I do feel like Apple would like to move everybody to its much more profitable iOS.
It appears that way. I love my iPad and I love my iPhone, but I also love my Mac and I love my Windows machine. I want those to not stay exactly the way they are. I'm not suggesting we shouldn't move forward. But don't break things. Don't take away sort of a cherished way to operate and make it hard for experienced users to continue to work with their products. I mean, one of the things that always bugs, and this window, this ribbon on Microsoft Office still bothers me, because what they did is they said, we're going to make this easy for novices and hard for experienced users. It's actually harder for me
to
use Microsoft Office.
There are a lot more of them than there are of you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well.
I love listening to you in there. You're like, I can't believe they're not.
I know.
Well, you're the guy who's still using WordStar.
Don't out me.
Sorry.
I know. Harry just outed me. I actually used a WordStar Diamond, and if John Dvorak was here, he'd probably know what I was talking about.
I think he's the only one old
probably
enough.
The only one who knows.
Even I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Someday he'll tell you.
The thing is, they're going to do what they want to do. I mean, people think Apple's some sort of like United States government or something, but they do what they want to do.
That's a good point.
They're going to do what they want to do.
That's right.
They don't want to sell it. They don't have to sell it. Go get it somewhere else.
Right. I mean, you're absolutely right.
So whatever.
Apple's not taking away your windows and stuff, at least not yet.
Right.
Well, I still have my Osborne One.
It does seem like, they're doing this gatekeeper thing, which is interesting. This is their new security model. which I like. I think it's sensible. They're offering everybody who uses Mountain Lion basically three choices. You can lock Mountain Lion down and say, I'm only going to buy from the Mac App Store. And those will all be vetted apps. And developers will use have there's a permissions style system very much like iOS or Android, where a developer has to say, I'm going to do this, this, and this, and can only do this in this sense. And the App Store will let you know this guy has access to your contact list or not. And they can't access your contact list if they don't explicitly say, this is one of the things I need to do. There's kind of a middle ground where you use apps from other places, but they all have to be signed, somehow approved by Apple. And then there's the, oh, you be careful. You can, you know, download apps from all sorts of scary places, kind of like the way it is right now.
Yeah.
And I do feel like Apple does want to move everybody into the App Store. There's a good security model argument for it, but I think it's also there's a very good revenue model argument.
And Microsoft will be doing the same.
Microsoft's doing the same?
Microsoft will be more aggressive than Apple is right now because Metro apps will all have to go through the Microsoft Store.
Windows on ARM, you will only be able to buy. Well, that's the same as the iPad, though.
It's the iPad model rather than the Mac model. Right.
But I think the idea of trusted brands for getting your content is important. Now, I have to disclose CNET. I write for CNET. They're part of CBS. They own download.com. But I tend to go to download.com to download my apps for the PC or the Mac.
You trust them?
Well, I trust them more than nothing.
Right.
At least I know they at least claim to vet for malware. I don't know if they're perfect. But I feel more comfortable there or some other vetted location than going off on Google and finding some app developer site that I've never heard of. So I think we do need these kinds of trusted brands. Amazon wants to be one. Apple clearly wants to be one. I'm not sure what Google's strategy is because the Android marketplace is really
opportunity here to be the last bastion of open. I guess Linux is the last bastion of open. But Google can kind of represent an intermediate consumer brand that is still kind of in the favor of open standards. Is that a good play for Google to make, or should they lock it down like Microsoft and Apple are about to do?
Well, Google is trying to be somewhat open, which is a difficult place to be.
It's kind of half open.
There's truly open, which is fantastic and flexible, but can be dangerous. And there's locked down, which has all kinds of issues, but is at least safe. And you know, with the whole controversy over Android and the degree to which Google is not controlling what carriers do with that and is not ensuring that you have the latest version of the software, you're seeing that
supposedly
the challenges they have.
They said they're going to fix that, but I don't see any evidence that they're
they said they were going to fix that like a year and a half ago,
and it's
gotten worse since then.
Yeah. In fairness, they have Bouncer, which is a cloud-based security scanner that supposedly provides us with some level of protection.
Google does.
Google does, yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah,
Bouncer.
It's called Bouncer.
The sites you find through Google shouldn't be dangerous, or at least
we've had that. That's the malware warning when you go to a website. Yeah.
Bouncer also works on the Google on the, as I understand it, on the apps in the Android marketplace as well.
And Google is bouncing malware apps from the Android market, so it's not really a wild west.
Right. In fact, I'm looking Google's Android Bouncer to boost security on Android market. So,
not doing is sort of being as particular as Apple is about sort of overall quality and whether they are already have enough apps in a particular category.
Yeah, or they don't like the graphics on the app or
But they are trying to prevent dangerous apps from getting in there.
Right. And also, you know, they are.
That's kind of, to me, the right ground.
I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, yeah.
I personally wish that Apple would essentially have a system where the apps get in as long as they're not dangerous, and the ones that are good are at the top of the results, and the stuff that's garbage is allowed in, but it fades away.
What about porn? Apple will not allow you to create an app for porn. I mean, porn's legal in the United States. Should they be required to allow us to?
No, I mean, I think they get to make that call.
Why? Again, with you, with Larry, what's going on? Like,
No. I'm not
Larry wants porn.
I know. I thought that I want porn. I run safekids.com.
Just put it in normal context. Walmart doesn't have to sell porn.
Exactly.
It's illegal. It just sings. Neither does anybody else. It's just.
It might be a little different.
The difference is that if Walmart doesn't have to sell anything, but someone else can just as easily sell. That, you know, you can go across the street, and it's really hard to go across the street to get an app for an iPad or an iPhone.
You can get all the porn you want just on
your browser. It's an oligopoly.
Well, I'm talking about apps. Forget porn for a
minute. There really are only two, maybe three platforms total. Yeah. So
let me see, I'm being safe here. There's plenty of porn on the internet, and it's very available.
I understand that. Thank you. My point is, I was using porn as a metaphor for the fact that Apple controls not only based on malware, but other kinds of values that it's established. And that could be a very good thing, but it does block some.
I had a caller on the radio show who has Macs, Mac routers, Mac everywhere, Apple TV. He wants to buy an Android phone, and he wants to do some of the things he does with his iPhone on his Android phone. He can't. There is a certain amount of lock-in that Apple perpetuates. Mm-hmm. Now, it's good for business, but I don't know if it's good for users.
It's what it is. I don't know what. I don't feel like it's these are commercial products you buy and make decisions on, and I don't think it's the only choice out there that I've seen. You know what I mean? It's just there may be only a few platforms, but there are a few platforms, and you can't. It's right. Not. It doesn't dominate everything. And if you happen to like it, they've never. Apple has got a million problems, but pretending that they're not sort of the fascist world of Apple is just kind of silly.
But they're a walled garden.
Once you buy into the platform, it's kind of like moving to a country. You can say, you don't like American Raw's, move to Russia. Well, that's true, but if you live in the Apple world, you live in the Apple world.
Yeah,
No, it's like moving to a suburb. It's not like moving to Russia.
Larry's just back from Moscow.
Suburb, and you can't do this with your lawn, and that's just the way it is. I don't think you go like
Apple still
occupy Palo Alto.
So you're saying Apple has covenants?
They still have more apps and better apps than Android, despite all the restrictions.
And there are reasons why people like covenants. I mean, I'm not saying it's necessarily evil. I'm just saying that there are certain freedoms you give up once you enter that world. And I use an iPhone. I live in that world.
I'm constantly disappointed by the degree to which the Android store doesn't have better stuff because in my heart I feel like it should have better stuff because there are no restrictions.
I like everything. There's great stuff on here. There's stuff you cannot do on an Android phone that you cannot do on an iPhone. I have this set up so that when I put this face down, it doesn't ring, it doesn't buzz, it doesn't make it, and then when I turn it face up, it turns back on. I can't do that with an iPhone. That's great. Software that's on Android that's not on an iPhone.
But I feel like Android should... in theory, have totally trumped Apple, and it has not. At least
it's actually doing pretty well.
It's doing all right.
It's getting better.
Yeah. It's doing all right. Yeah. Apple,
and
meanwhile,
you'll be at lots of porn.
Apple, meanwhile, is asking the bankrupt.
I run safekids.com, so please don't associate me with porn.
Yeah, and there's a sheriff in Arizona.
Not you, Larry. Just someone.
I like porn.
I'm not.
Nothing wrong with it. As you pointed out, it is not illegal.
It is not illegal, and it shouldn't.
No, it's not. No. Some of it should be.
Some of it should be.
Well, child porn is illegal.
That's obvious.
It should be.
So how do you feel about this? Apple is asking the bankruptcy court if they can sue Kodak. Why not? You know, the company's down. Let's hit it one more time. It's like UFC. I was watching the Ultimate Fighting the other day with my son. Guy knocks the other fighter out. And before the referee can get in, he leaps on the guy and punches him four more times. Just in case. We don't want Kodak to get up. One more time. I'm sorry.
Part of Kodak's theory on how it was going to do well was to sue other people. Kodak sued Apple before Apple sued
Kodak.
That's
true. Kodak sued them first.
Right.
Kodak does have 1,100 patents.
Right.
They do. I was just in Rochester. It's very depressing there. It's very depressing.
Because of Kodak?
It just is, yeah.
I think it was always depressing there.
It's really gotten much more depressing. But it's a sad situation there. But they do have a lot of patents, and they're valuable to some extent. And that's what they're banking on. And
Apple
that's what they shouldn't be
surprised. Exactly. And Apple has to pay attention to that because somebody's going to own those patents.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the iPad 3, you guys on All Things D said first week in March. And now a lot of people are jumping on March 7th. Is that your belief too, March 7th?
Yes.
Or just, yes.
Not my belief. It's my... It's not a belief. It's going to happen then.
It's fact.
It's a fact, my friend. We've been pretty good on the dates of the Apple.
No, you guys are amazing. You've got great sources. Yeah, so that means, okay, I got a prediction that we'll all get not me, of course, but you guys will all get invitations to the Apple event February 29th, right when Microsoft is announcing its Windows on ARM in Barcelona.
Maybe so.
I'll be in Doha that day, so I won't be covering it live.
But, March 7th, you'll be where?
Qatar. Still can't pronounce it, but I'll be there giving
you'll be in Qatar. Yep. Wow.
Yeah. But no, this is going to be yet another.
Is this your first time there?
It's my first time in Qatar. I've been
to Bahrain. So they can't say welcome back when you
go. Oh, no. They might anyway.
That was a good one, Leo.
I'd throw that in just to lighten the situation a little bit.
Up your nose with a rubber hose.
So what do you... Hey! What do you...
You mentioned it.
Hey, Mr. Carter! What else do your sources tell you? March 7th, are they going to do a retina display?
I have no idea. I don't know. I didn't write those stories. Well, John Patchkowski's our crack Apple expert. I think that's what he was saying. A number of the things that had been previously reported by many others. A lot of people have done a good job on this.
2048 by 1536, it would be...
That's what John said. Yes.
Stunning. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, it will be double. I'll tell you why. There's good reason to think it'll be.
I don't think we know if it's stunning. I don't think anyone's seen the stunning part, but we'll see.
But I think what we can presume is it will be double because that's what Apple does. That's what they did with the Retina display on the iPhone because then graphics scale a little bit better than, you know.
You don't have to fiddle with the aspect ratio.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be double in both aspect ratios. Well, I can tell you, I don't know, but if it's that high DPI, it's going to be gorgeous, I would think.
The thing I'm curious about is whether it has LTE or not, because it sounds like the conventional wisdom is yes, it will, but it's not truly a done deal.
My sources at Verizon say they're testing both, and that Apple was wanted to see if they, you know, LTE would give you decent battery life, would perform properly, and they tell me that, in fact, it's doing very well, so they think there probably will be an LTE. But I think you're right. I think it's going right up to the wire.
I think the bigger story here is how quickly iPad has iterated while these other Chromebooks and everything else just are still not catching up. They're on the third one, and it's far superior to number one, and they're still not a true competitor to this thing. So it's, that, to me, is really interesting. It's years now. This has been years now.
Yeah. Quad core or dual core? A6?
I'm just saying the whole idea of the tablet market still is dominated by this group.
With Amazon being an asterisk.
I would say Amazon's probably the most.
Fire's pretty good.
Kindle Fire. I'm saying that would be the most, but still they're so far behind, and it's really amazing. This is the third version.
Transformer Prime's pretty cool.
Somebody in the chat room was praising the Transformer.
I like it. We have it. Yeah. It's quad core. It's dockable, so you would like it because it's a tablet that docks right into its own keyboard. Same price, $500 for just the tablet.
Still isn't touching the market share. It's still not touching. Yeah, it's interesting.
I think mostly you could blame Google for that because, frankly, Ice Cream Sandwich and Honeycomb are kind of crappy compared to iPad.
It's just interesting.
I think really Google.
Ice Cream Sandwich is actually quite good. It's just that almost no device has that except with a handful of exceptions.
I was underwhelmed by it. The Prime did, and also the Nexus. I know I'm the only one in the world who doesn't like it, but that's just me.
On quad core for the iPad 3, I've seen stories that definitively state, yes, it will have it, and stories that definitively state, no, it won't have it. So we'll see.
I mean, the key thing also between the iPad and the competitors is that Apple owns practically its entire ecosystem. It owns the hardware. It owns the operating system. And it can do it right, and there's not going to be the fragmentation. There's not going to be, Google did a great job, but some vendor screwed up the implementation or decided to change the user interface because they thought they could add value. Apple doesn't have that problem.
Right.
And that was an advantage in the PC market. I remember Bill Gates talking about that years ago. That was an advantage they had, and it's an advantage they have in the mobile market as well.
It is, and that's kind of... open versus closed,
It's open versus closed. Mm-hmm. Now, ultimately, there's no question that Google's going to have a bigger installed base. I think it probably already does. But the fact that Apple is going to be able to charge a premium for its products, continue to charge a premium, and dominate the market, I mean, it wasn't able to do that in the PC market. But it actually is doing that in this new market.
Kara, does John say that the iPad 3 will be available quickly after March 7th, or...
I think he didn't specify. You know, we tend not to say stuff we don't know or speculate. We will point to other people's things. I think I don't remember the last piece he wrote. I think he didn't. I think he said
he didn't say.
We didn't know. We didn't say.
There's a lot when it comes to that we don't know. That's for sure. But March 7th, we definitely know that.
March 7th. Yep.
So if you were looking for an iPad, you should wait.
I'm not going. So.
But you have the choice.
That's true. Fair point.
Do not have the choice.
I don't believe they don't invite you. They should be like walking up the red carpet, Leo. Really?
I hate them back.
Really?
Yeah. Me and MG are going to go have a drink. Oh, no, wait. He's in there.
I bet he'll be busy, too.
I can't have a drink. I'm going to be... There are bars in Qatar.
No bars in Qatar.
There are at the hotels, I'm told.
Yeah. Let's talk about Windows 8 in just a bit. Harry actually has an interesting point of view on this one. Windows for ARM, a dead end...
Right.
Yeah. You forgot you wrote that.
Time passes quickly.
It was only Valentine's. It was 5 days ago. We'll talk in more. But things have happened in the Microsoft world very rapidly. So maybe you've changed your tune. I'll give you the chance to clarify in just a moment. But first, let's talk a little bit about Squarespace.com, the secret behind exceptional websites. It's not a secret anymore. The word's getting out. If you want to create a website that is gorgeous, that is powerful, that never goes down, that is always secure, you got to go to Squarespace.com. This is hosting plus the best software out there. And you know what I love? They're so confident of their capabilities. They make it very simple for you to try. Just go to Squarespace. I don't know of any company that does this. Go to Squarespace.com. Click the Try It Free banner. All you need is a name, a password, an email address. You don't need any identifying information, your credit card or anything. You can even, invent an email address. Not invent one. You want to have it be a real one so you can, if you forget your password. But you could create a new address just for this. And for 2 weeks, you will have absolute access to everything Squarespace does. And boy, does it do some great stuff. The social media integration, the iPhone and Android app, iPad as well, the import and export. This is their philosophy. You can get everything from your old WordPress movable type blogger or typepad site into your new one and transfer it out. And in every case, everything's preserved, including links, images, even comments are all preserved. They have a remapping feature that makes sure that your SEO does not get modified. All those links from the years gone by, they all still work. They're all intact. Your page rank is unchanged. So it really is simple to move to a Squarespace site. And man, what do you get? You get hosting that just you cannot knock down. They have a virtual hosting technology that's very sophisticated. 85, they have some new ones. 85, 13 new templates, 85 style options. That just looks so great. And the beauty of this is you start with this template, but then you have total creative control. Even if you don't know CSS or JavaScript, of course, if you do, they've got a great new CSS editor with colorizing and full screen and all that stuff. They're using the Google Web Fonts, so you have 300-plus fonts to choose from. Your site will not look boring. And each site is absolutely unique, as you can tell if you go to the examples page. Every site has its own feeling and personality. You can't go to a Squarespace site and say, oh, yeah, that looks like a Squarespace site. It doesn't. All you can say is, boy, that performs like a Squarespace site. Look at this. I love this. Dana Tamachi custom chalk lettering. Now, see, if you're an artist or a photographer, really important that your portfolio snap, it shine, and that's where Squarespace is so great. They also have a form builder. They have all sorts of great features. I want you to try it free right now. Just go to squarespace.com, click that green try it free button if you decide you want it. By the way, they do have new free live classes to help you get more comfortable. If you go to their blog, blog.squarespace.com, they've got schedules of classes. This is kind of cool. I mean, they really want to help people do the best job possible. If you decide to buy, you'll get 15% off your new account for 6 months. The key on that, though, is to use the offer code TWIT2. Two for the month of February. We use a different one every month. TWIT2. And, once you sign up, you might want to ask them to participate in the beta for Squarespace 6. I've seen it, and it's amazing. Just amazing. Squarespace.com. Give it a try today. These guys are great. They're in New York, in Manhattan. They love New York. It's nice sometimes to see tech companies that don't feel like they have to be in San Francisco. Not that, I mean, we're in the Bay Area, but I'm not saying anything bad about San Francisco, mind you. Yep. Is Windows for ARM a dead end? This is Microsoft, I think you said this, is really taking kind of a gamble, a little bit of a leap with this Metro interface, the tablets, and the requirement, for instance, that if you're going to be on the tablet, you sell in the Microsoft store, that you be a Metro app. And no, even though we have desktop, you can't have it.
Right.
They're being very aggressive about Metro.
You can't do desktop apps. There will be a desktop, and you'll be able to use the file manager.
Which is nice.
But on the ARM systems, no desktop apps. And I wrote that story because I saw something on Cult of Mac, which wondered about this thing people have been wondering about for a while, which is whether Apple will ever make an ARM-based Mac, given that Apple is now designing its own ARM chips. And people have been wondering, maybe they'll dump Intel
dump
for
Intel.
The Macs. And the Cult of Mac story really made a compelling case that they won't do that because, well, ARM does have some advantages right now for mobile devices in terms of really great battery life. Intel is roaring back, and in theory, within a few years, Intel will have all the advantages it has right now in terms of great performance. and it will get back in the race with battery efficiency. And so this Called a Mac article argued that Apple won't do ARM Macs because it doesn't really need to, because within a few years, Intel will give them everything they want. And so that made me wonder, if there's no need for an ARM-based Mac, does that mean there's also not going to be any need for an ARM-based Windows machine within you know, 2 or 3 years?
Because Microsoft is porting Windows 8 to ARM.
And if that's true, maybe ARM-based Windows is just a stopgap.
Right.
We'll see. Aren't they saying,
though, that the ARM-based tablets, that's the same Windows 8 as is running on the desktop?
It is, for the most part. And I think ultimately Microsoft can't say, well, in 2015 we'll be fine.
We don't know.
Apple is already in great shape because they have the iPad.
Right.
Microsoft has no answer to the iPad yet. And it decided to make Windows 8 the answer to the iPad.
Right.
It can't say Windows 8 will be a great competitor to the iPad in 2015.
Right.
It has to
try to
do it now.
Right.
And so I think it's conceivable that it makes sense for Microsoft to do ARM. But a few years from now, Intel will come back and ARM will have turned out to be just sort of something that made sense within a small window.
Apple's advantage to have two platforms that they could be on.
It works great right now.
So whoever ends up winning, you know, bully for them.
I still feel that Apple probably will eventually have something that kind of looks like a Mac that runs on an ARM processor.
Right.
And it may not be called a Mac, and it probably won't run Mac apps.
I wonder if I really do think it's all just going to kind of mush together. But
Harry, you wrote a piece where you questioned whether the iPad is in fact a PC. I mean, you basically said it is a PC.
And I like a loose definition of PC.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Why should we define PCs as looking exactly like this? In fact, there was a time when these guys wouldn't have been considered PCs, but they are.
I asked on Twitter, I asked people to define PC, and I got about 100 different definitions, all of them good and all of them different. But the one I liked most was somebody who said that a PC is what people buy when they go out to buy a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's sort of true. I think ultimately consumers decide what a PC is. And I think there are still people who really violently argue that the iPad is not a PC, and there are people that say that you aren't a PC unless you run Windows.
Mm-hmm.
I think over time, people will
broaden their definition.
I would argue that this is a personal computer.
Yes,
I mean,
totally.
Call it what you want. It does pretty much the same thing that a PC does.
I like the term phablet. I just like it.
That's what I've got. I have a phablet. It is
makes me laugh every time I say it. Every time I say it, I laugh.
It's a good word, isn't it?
Yeah, phablet.
I really like this note. Mm. I know I'm the only one in the world, but I like
it. Use it as a mirror while you're at it.
You can. Yeah. Facebook launches verified accounts. I'm verified.
Congratulations.
Facebook said I'm me.
Yep.
Thank you, Facebook. I had to send them my passport.
Right. Or driver's license.
And they said, by the way, that they would delete it when they were done. Do you think I can trust them?
Well, no.
I meant yes. Not your actual passport, a facsimile. I sent them
Your driver's license, I think, is also. Okay.
You can use your driver's license, yeah. But I sent them a passport. I thought, if they're going to invade my privacy, why don't they just, I'll just give it to them all.
So now you are the real Leo.
Yeah, but it doesn't say that anywhere on the Facebook page.
Doesn't have a little badge?
No. Doesn't do anything.
What's the benefit then?
They say we'll recommend you more if you do it.
And also you can use a pseudonym if you need to.
And I can use my nickname, McG, I can now use on the website. So that's good.
What is your nickname, Leo?
McG.
McG?
No.
Really?
Do I have an... I thought about that because once they said you're verified, they said now you have a choice. You can replace Leo Laporte on your Facebook page with your nickname, or you can have your name and then underneath it, McG, or whatever you wanted. So, and I use Chief Twit. So I thought that's nice. Yeah. Chief Twit. But I decided not to.
Yeah, I haven't done mine yet. I'm actually thinking about that.
You need to own it, Leo. Chief Twit. I am.
I own it. Maybe
get it up on Facebook, my friend. Then
then it's
be
real.
Happy with it.
Kind of like a relationship status. Once that makes it official.
Mm. You know, I was the guy who deleted his Facebook account last year. I was so angry, and then I came back tail between my legs, and now I feel like this is great. I get more engagement on Facebook than anywhere.
Yeah,
it's like.
Well, now that you can subscribe, people can subscribe to you, I think really changes a lot.
Yeah.
Huge.
Although, you know, one odd thing, when they were doing the timeline, I just said I was married, even though I've been married 13 years. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I got
congratulations. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got congratulations. I didn't get any presents yet, but it was really bizarre.
Yeah. As soon as you announce your relationship status, they put hearts around it. It's like, it's such a big,
interesting.
It's a life transition, even though it's been that way forever.
Yeah, I'm thinking of changing it every week to freak people out.
I do.
It's complicated this
week. It's complicated, yeah. Exactly.
It's always complicated.
No, but true. I did, and this is, I'm totally a sucker because I started populating the timeline with my life story, my baby pictures and all that stuff.
Oh, dear.
I know, it's sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, it's what it is. It's not sad. You're probably a cute baby, I'm guessing.
I got sucked into it. I'm giving Facebook all my information. Why not?
Go for it,
Leo. Why not? They know it all anyway. You saw that Target knows I'm pregnant.
Right.
I thought you look great. You're glowing. I'm good for second trimester. I thought that really, this was another, was it in the Times? I think it was. I think this is a very interesting point to make that, in fact, your habits tell, you don't have to reveal anything to people for them to figure out what's going on.
Right.
Target actually figured out, this is from the New York Times, that a teenage girl was pregnant before her parents did. And I think anybody who is worried about privacy should really read this because the real world, they're doing the same thing. It's not just the internet. It talks about a statistician for Target in 2002. His name was Andrew Poole, who was approached by the marketing department. They asked him, if we wanted to figure out if a customer is pregnant, even if we didn't want her to know, could you do that? And he said, yeah, I could do that. I got a master's degree in science. It turns out that there's so much data smog left behind by your purchases at Target, by information they can glean about you, that they can tell an awful lot. Now, there's a reason why Target wants to know this. It turns out Target, which sells everything from milk to stuffed animals to lawn furniture to electronics, most people see it as like, I'm going to go to Target to buy this, whatever it is, clothes or whatever people buy, lawn chairs. And they don't pick up a quart of milk, except there's one time in your life where your whole thing changes, and it's when you've got a baby because you're crazy, you haven't slept, and if there's milk there, you're going to say, you're going to make one trip for diapers and everything. So what they really want to do is to change these consumers' habits at this one window of opportunity when they can do it. And so it's very important to Target to know when you're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can, he says, we knew, this is the statistician, Andrew Poole, if we could identify them in their second trimester, there's a good chance we could capture them for years. As soon as we get them buying diapers from us, they're going to start buying everything else, too. If you're rushing through a store looking for bottles and you pass orange juice, you're going to grab a carton. Oh, and there's that new DVD I want. Soon you'll be buying cereal and paper towels from us, and you'll keep coming back. So they basically, they apparently, and Target's not the only retailer that does this, for years, for decades, Target has assigned each shopper, as you go in the store, a unique code, your guest ID.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep track of everything. If you use a credit card or a coupon, if you fill out a survey, if you mail in a refund, if you call the customer helpline, if you open an email we've sent you or visit our website, we record it and we link it to your guest ID.
You know, this could be a marketing opportunity. Instead of buying a test strip, women can just go into Target.
Am I pregnant?
And they can tell you. You know, scan it through the check stand.
Hey, Target, am I pregnant?
I think the lesson is pay for everything in cash.
Yeah.
And they're buying.
You know, may I just note, as the only person here who actually has been pregnant, it's not the worst thing to have deals and stuff given to you. As long as you acquiesce to have it done yourself.
Acquiescing? Did you know that Target has your guest ID and all that stuff?
Yes, of course I did. Safeway has the same thing. When you know, you buy, you know, cat food. And
yeah, do you have a club card? Do you buy the, do you use
grocery? Yes,
yeah,
of course.
Because
yes,
you get a deal.
No, because
and you know
perfectly
well that they're going to give you a deal. Prices are lower for club card holders because they're collecting all that information.
Right.
You know that.
Indeed.
It's not so much that prices are lower for club card owners.
Well, they are.
It's that they're higher for non-club
card. Oh, okay. Sorry. Right.
And I should say I have a fake ID for Safeway, and I try not to use my credit card at
Really?
Safeway.
My God, are you violating their terms of service?
On the other hand,
where's the FBI?
On the other hand, Target,
for that.
I go in and I pay with a credit card, so...
According to this Times article, buy data about your ethnicity, job history, the magazines you read, if you've ever declared bankruptcy or got divorced, the year you bought or lost your... The reason, by the way, they want to know... As soon as we had a baby, we got all these offers in the mail because the hospital sells your information immediately.
Right, right.
But that's why Target wants to know before you have the baby because they want to beat these offers to them in the mail. Right. It's like they're...
And Facebook, when you say you're married, Facebook, when you first say you're married, if you're young, Facebook will start promoting baby kinds of stuff because they figure eventually
you're going to get.
Although it's very, you know, it's not very well targeted. I'm always getting gay man cruises, so it's kind of interesting. And I'm thinking about going on one.
Maybe you'd like to meet a gay man. You never know.
I would. I live in the Castro, so it's not an issue. So yeah.
I changed my relationship status to single immediately.
Yeah.
I got dating sites. I didn't know there were so many of them for people over 55.
Hmm. Wow. I told Facebook I was 89 just to see what would happen.
Stuff, right?
Stuff for really old people.
Yeah.
I change my birthday all the time. And I get lots of birthday greetings, I'll tell you.
And I don't understand why Facebook lets you change your birthday because it's one thing about you that's not going to change.
Yeah.
Well, you know, think about it. Does Facebook care if those ads are mistargeted? No, they just want the money. So whatever age you want to be, Harry, you be it, because we'll sell an ad for you.
I don't think you can be 12. I think they can't be 12.
They
do have
to.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Because they have to.
Right.
But I changed it because I was getting all these ads saying, like, we have free iPads for 47-year-old men. And I was like, okay, what happens if I change my age to 89? And it said,
free iPads for 89-year-old men. Who live in Petaluma,
My wife got one of those, and she was so freaked out. She said, how do they know? How does this advertiser know my age? And, of course, the advertiser doesn't know her age. It's the Facebook is delivering
What did you say to her?
I said, what Facebook
is doing.
I said,
honey, did you tell them your birthday?
And, well, she told Facebook her birthday, and Facebook is delivering the ads.
And, in fact, the ads that do that are violating Facebook's guidelines. And
I thought you could buy that. You could, like, buy. No, I want to buy 89-year-old men.
You can buy that.
But you can't claim, no matter what somebody's age is, that you're targeting them because of that.
So in the ad copy, you can't say, I know you're 89.
I think if you actually are targeting 89-year-olds, that might be okay. But you can't just plug in the age no matter what.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I see that all the time, though, in my Facebook ads. You know, 55-year-old men who live in Northern California often have prostate problems. you think I'm joking.
I don't. It's just funny.
I know.
They'll just let you know if you do.
You can imagine how I laugh.
Well, you know, it's okay.
It's not funny at all. I'm sorry. It's a very serious illness.
they haven't informed you that you have a prostate problem, so you're probably okay.
No, that's right. But I could have an ischemic episode at any moment. In fact, I think I'm having one.
That's just me, baby. That's just
I think I'm having one right now. So, Eric.
Don't joke, honey.
No, it's not funny. There's nothing funny about ischemic episodes.
It's a little funny. I got a little humor out of it. But,
I
can say to my kids now, don't give me a stroke. So,
I love it. You know. By the way, Eric Schmidt selling his stock a little bit, just a little bit, 0.7%. Man, I wish 0.7% of anything I owned was worth $1.45 billion.
Exactly. That's a lot of money.
Holy camoly. 2.4 million shares.
He took it all in 20s.
I'll take it in unmarked bills.
I wish 1,000% of anything I owned was worth
Eric Schmidt, 56-year-old billionaires from Northern California often have prostate problems. Google's...
That is really bad, but it made me laugh.
It's a funny joke.
It is. Well done. Well done.
Good humor is often painful. For the victim. Netflix is bringing back DVD subscriptions.
They never went away.
Well, they made it impossible to find it for a while, apparently.
$7.99 a month. Yeah. DVD only. MySpace signs up 1 million new users last month. What the hell's going on there?
Music.
Oh.
Really?
Music.
It's a place to listen to music.
It's not a social network anymore. It's a music site.
It's a music site.
Absolutely. Speaking of music, Sony says, oops, we didn't really mean to raise the price on Whitney Houston albums the day after she died.
Well, look at her. She used to, people don't remember when she wasn't sort of the drug addict that she became, but she was quite a performer. It's so sad they did that.
Amazing singer. Yeah. And yes, her music is back on the charts. She's on the Billboard.
Yep.
Top 10, of course. And I guess it makes perfect sense for Sony to hike the price from $7.80 to $12.50.
Incredible.
In the UK.
But
in the UK.
You know the asterisk on that one, Leo.
What's the asterisk?
It was a mistake.
Oh.
It was an employee error.
Oh, yeah, it was
now, they're saying employee error as if some clerk did it by mistake. An employee could have been the president of the company, for all we know.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an error. It was a huge lapse of judgment.
Apparently, a Sony Music middle manager did have that authority.
Apparently.
And, hey, he knew there would be a lot of sales. Yeah. We can make a few extra bucks. By the way, Sony
Although, I have to say, I had a lot of young people that were telling me, like, who's Whitney Houston? I literally wanted to punch them.
Oh,
it was amazing.
Did you see all the tweets during the Grammys? who is this Paul McCartney guy? Who is this old guy? Yes. Who is this old guy on the stage? Why is he? By the way, that was a horrible song. So I understand, frankly.
Yeah. But you know, and the Whitney Houston being broadcast, the funeral was sort of I found it riveting. Actually, it was a beautiful funeral.
Did they broadcast it or stream it?
They had it on BET. I watched it on BET. Then they had it online a lot. Some of the speeches were amazing. The whole thing was fantastic. It was interesting that this is where we're gotten, that we broadcast funerals, essentially.
That is a little weird, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. It was beautiful, though.
This is on BuzzFeed. Who TF is Paul McCartney? Who is he? Hella old, too. Yeah. I don't know who Paul McCartney is. Who's Paul McCartney?
Oh, my God.
Who the heck is he? What? Bring out Lil the Bass God. Yeah. To be honest, I have no idea.
That's incredible to me. It's just like, I know who Mozart is. You know what I mean? It's like literally like. It's,
who is this white man, says Harry Vickilla.
All right.
Oh, my God. I love it that somebody had the good sense to capture all these tweets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm about to sound naive, but as F, but who the hell is Paul McCartney? This song sucks, BTW.
Right. That may be true.
It was horrible. Yeah. That's okay. He's Paul McCartney.
Exactly.
Who is Paul McCartney again? All right. Oh, I like this one. Who the F is Paul McCartney? Jesse McCartney's dad or uncle? All right.
I think 55-year-old Ben in Northern California
knows who Paul McCartney is.
Exactly.
I want to talk about this jot form thing because this seems really wrong to me. I don't know if you're up on this. So the Secret Service seized jotform.com, which is, I guess, a site that lets you create online forms. That's all.
Yeah.
And they seized them with the assistance of GoDaddy, the registrar, disabled 2 million forms on jotform.com. 2 million users. The Jotform called the Secret Service. And the agent in charge said, you know, I'm kind of busy. Can I get back to you in a few days? This is their business, right?
Right.
Their business has been pulled down without due process, mm-hmm. without any information. They're offline. They're out of business. And the Secret Service agent in charge says, you know, I'll get back to you. They kept calling. She started to get annoyed. And for days, they didn't know. And then just magically, it came back.
Right.
They've not notified us, but it looks like they might have lifted the suspension, says the guy in charge. We'll probably never find out the reason for a suspension. It's been a very difficult. Okay, it was down for 2 days for both our users and for us. So it was just 2 days.
It's a long time in internet time. And the key thing is that there are whatever the company might or might not have been guilty of, they were innocent users whose forms were taken down. So people who weren't even by implication guilty of anything were affected by this, which is one of the reasons why I think a lot of people were very upset about SOPA and PIPA, because it would have had
this is the kind of thing, but the fact is they didn't need SOPA and PIPA.
Right.
ICE can do this anytime.
It was ad hoc SOPA.
Yeah, well, SOPA and PIPA protect us against foreign sites, but we don't need that to protect us against US-based sites. We can just raid them or take them down. When I say we, of course, I'm referring to our government.
Kara Swisher is saying,
yes.
Yes, she jumps in. Yes, and that's me.
SOPA.
I'm over here. Mr. Kata. Yahoo, I love this. I just love this title. Yahoo may not need a lobotomy, but it definitely can't endure a brain-sapping proxy fight.
Yes, they cannot. Do you like my artwork? I like that.
I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy. So Daniel Loeb is an activist shareholder who is not happy. Yeah. Why wouldn't he be happy? Yahoo's been so well run over the last few years.
He's like a car. It's the new version of Carl Icahn. A little savvier, a little more internet savvy.
Get off of my lawn!
He's a very savvy investor, very well respected on Wall Street. He owns about 6% of Yahoo.
Whoa, and 6%'s a lot. I'd be unhappy too.
Indeed, he does. And so he's done rather well since it's gone up since he bought it. But
it has gone up. All right.
Yes. He's put together mostly because of the fighting in the China thing that fell apart last week, which we also scooped on. But they, you know, he's put together his own slate of directors, and he's going to challenge the current Yahoo slate at the annual meeting in June until then.
Do you think Yahoo is salvageable?
Yes.
I'm surprised that it's not more valuable. It's got some great titles. Yes.
Many people don't think it is at this point, but I don't think it's in a circling the drain kind of way at all. People always ask why I write about it so much. It's because it's still very profitable. It's got hundreds of millions of users. It's got some amazing properties, and it's continued to be, you know, over the many years, you know, it's been a crisis of leadership there, mostly from the board and from some of its top executives. But the employees of Yahoo don't deserve this kind of fate at this point.
So the China deal was Alibaba Group wanted to buy in, right?
No. Yahoo owns big pieces of its two Asian assets. One is in Yahoo Japan, and the other is in the Alibaba Group, which have grown like crazy, especially the Alibaba unit. And so, yeah, Alibaba wants it back.
They want to buy it back. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, they want to buy it back. They bought it for $1 billion initially, and now it's worth many, many, many times that. And so they want to, you know, there's issues of doing business in China that are very complicated, and Alibaba has long wanted more shares back. Yahoo owns 40% of it, I think, something like that. And so it's been its best deal ever, actually. One of Yahoo's smartest deals ever is owning something else. There's a chart of...
Thank God for this infographic, because I have no idea.
Exactly, yeah. So essentially, they want to do this tax-free split that... Cash-rich tax-free. It's a way to avoid taxes in order to get assets. And so they were having talks, and then as usual with Yahoo and Alibaba, the talks fell apart. And so now that's a problem, because that's what's been keeping the stock elevated, all this money that was going to come to Yahoo. So they might go back to the talks. They're like the real housewives of New Jersey. They're fighting, and tables get overturned, and then they're back again next week kind of thing. So... we'll see.
Are you a big fan of infographics? You use a lot of infographics?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I use them. Yeah, I like them. I like them a lot. Some of them, if they're well done, I think they're really helpful to people. But in the Yahoo's case, they have a new CEO, and then Loeb is attacking still, and we'll see what happens. But my whole point was they can't take enough. This is everything about Yahoo's been about the finances, deals, and the board problems, and not about making products that people like. And
that's, which is too bad, because I think Yahoo, it seems to me, has value.
Yeah, I mean, but they still haven't innovated very much in the past couple of years. While everybody else, I mean, they could have
they've
done
let Flickr
kind
just kind of float around. They could have done
Instagram
Pinterest.
Now.
Yeah,
that could have been Pinterest. They could have done all kinds
that
of things.
Been
they
us.
Used to be very innovative.
Right.
Well, they should have, and they're, unfortunately, the employees sucked into this ridiculous machinations of its relatively incompetent board. I'm being nice when I say relatively. So you know, we'll see what happens here. And Loeb is agitating for change, and I don't think that's a good thing to have all this outside Wall Street machinations happening around an internet company. It just hurts it. I don't know. This is my opinion. But
I like infographics too, but there is a backlash.
Yeah, well, I think they can be overused and they can be irrelevant.
How about this one? This guy, Drake.
Oh, a huge one.
Proof that we are soulmates. We fit together so perfectly. What are the odds? So he's actually calculated the odds. There are 7 billion people on the Earth. That's 100 million women that... what equals women? How many could I have met? Not more than 4%, or not very many women. Divide that by 2 to get just the ladies. Multiply by 0.08 for ages 25 to 29. Take out the 88% who don't speak English well. That leaves 1.3 million total women whom I could have met, talked to, and fallen in love with in my lifetime. But there's so much more to you. Only 3% could keep me laughing. 2% are so gorgeous inside and out. 6% of people could leave a huge geek like me, like the one making this, could love a huge geek like me. Only 1% of people could bring total joy to my life. Wait a minute. That equals 0.48 total women on Earth as perfect as you. Stacey, your perfection is a statistical impossibility. You've made this very logical man admit that miracles do happen. They must. And you're the only evidence I'll ever need. I love you, which means my final logical query, will you marry me? Isn't that weird? But I love it.
Oh, yeah.
I like it.
Thank you. You know what? We're about love and all things D, really, at the heart
of
everything we do.
It's all about
we
love.
We felt like it was Valentine's Day, and Stacey works for Mashable. And
I didn't know
Drake
that.
Is our... Yeah, and Drake's our social media at All Things D head. And so he wanted to do this. And, you know, Walt is such a softy, he insisted. And so so we wanted to do this. It was really cute. And people really seemed to like it. And it was adorkable, as I said.
Adorkable.
And it worked. And they're getting married. And it was funny because we were trying to, like, make a joke that maybe All Things D and Mashable were merging. But they are in a much nicer way.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same kind of merger as, like, when Henry VIII's daughter marries the King of Spain's nephew. They just kind of, that's that kind of merger.
And you realize Target has already taken notice of that.
You'll be receiving mail about being pregnant any day now. Yeah. Any day now.
Well, you're romantic, Leo.
I saw that and I cavelled a little.
They really are the geekiest little couple ever. That's They're so cute. Perfect for each other.
Aww. Hey, it's been great, Kara. Thank you so much for being here. I know it's a little scheduling-wise difficult, so I appreciate you taking the time to spend with us. AllThingsD.com. They'll be busy March 7th. They're sure of it. Thank you, Kara Swisher. Also, thank you, Larry Magid, CBS Radio, Larry'sWorld.com. Give me something else to plug.
Oh, you can plug my Forbes blog. Yeah. Find me. SafeKids.com.
SafeKids.com.
ConnectSafely.org.
Yes.
Anything, all things
All things safety. And he's a big porn fan.
I believe it.
Yeah.
My wife might be.
Your wife's sitting right here?
She's sitting right there.
So how could he be? And Harry McCracken, you are now at Time. That's awesome. Editor-in-large, Time.com.
Time.
And that's where the technologer is now living.
Thank you, Leo.
Awesome. Thanks to you for joining us. Thanks to you all for being here. We've got a big week coming up. Tom Merritt, our news director and the man in charge of TNT, has a rundown. Tom?
Thanks, Leo. Coming up in the week ahead, the Raspberry Pi is expected to be finished on Monday, February 20th. That $25 Linux console should be on sale by the end of the month. Tuesday, February 21st, it's Happy Birthday to Legend of Zelda, which came out in Japan on that day in 1986. Wow. Also, the Dell earnings call is happening that day. Wednesday, February 22nd, we're expecting an extradition request for Mega Upload founder Kim.com to be filed. The PS Vita, for those who didn't pre-order, is arriving in the U.S. on AT&T, and earnings reports from HP and Pandora. That's a look at the week ahead.
He sounds like he's still a little under the weather. I hope you're feeling better, Tom. TNT, 2:30 Pacific, Monday through Friday, 5:30 Eastern time, right here. Keep up with your tech news. Is there anything else, Eileen Rivera, our esteemed producer, that I need to say?
I think we're good, unless you want to tell everybody about NAB.
We're going to be at the NAB show. That's in April. That'll be fun. Covering the National Association of Broadcasters yearly show, which is kind of like a CES for broadcast geeks. But, you know, there's a lot of cool stuff there. And you can find all the information about our coverage on our blog, inside.twit.tv. Stick around because Game On is in about an hour. Our great gaming show with Brian Brushwood and Veronica Belmont. They're in the house. And I believe a repeat appearance from LL Cool L, our Casual Encounters segment, should be a lot of fun. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time. Another twit.
This
in the can.
Is amazing.